Did Joe pop in yet?
No. Nope. All right, here we go. All right, there, Joe, here we go.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Good, that's the best one yet.
I am short.
Pizza, pizza.
Bingo! Showtime!
My fly is open.
I like sweet meat. It's a juxtaposition in my mouth. I like heat.
Were you making egg foo young in the kitchen? I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a limousine tech show, and that's fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. There ain't no funny duddies that a Lincoln bat. The stream is go direct to DLNTS.org. And the IC channel is a LinuxLink.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the cast is just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 1059 of the Linux Sling Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Joe.
Hello.
Yeah. And I don't think Dave's going to be on tonight, but possibly Joel. He's probably coming back from wherever the heck was church thing. So, anyway. I was kind of trying to look this up for a little more information, but it came across to us, our team, that about Docker Hub rate limiting. Now, it's something that's been in place since 2020, and it hasn't affected us, but I'm wondering if I misread something or something changed, and I'm having a hard time finding out why. So in a nutshell, our platform engineering team have put out a blog post about rate limits for Docker Hub for free or unauthenticated or free authenticated account. But these rate limits had gone back in place back in 2020. So essentially what it is, it's if you're using an unauthenticated account, or if you're not authenticated, first off, it's 100 pulls in a 6-hour period. But if you're using an authenticated free account, it's 200 pulls in a 6-hour period. And then I think ultimately, I don't know if there's any gradations in between there, but if you are on like a pro or team account, you get like 5,000 pools in a 24-hour period. Now, I guess the concern might have been more on the lines of the fact that perhaps there are more teams using it. And maybe that's the case, because there was a big push a few months ago to get off of Quay. And so we had been using Quay.io for, oh man, a long time. And when our team had heard, and this was over a year ago, that they were moving out of Quay or moving away from Quay, we had, originally, we were running a custom-built image, and that image was provided by our platform engineering team that was based off of CentOS, to which we added some extra requirements that we had on there. And we had moved off of that with our next generation of the platform, because we had migrated away from Couchbase. It allowed us to adopt the Alpine image. One of the big problems that we had with Alpine at the time was that there wasn't a pre-built Couchbase library package, and there were some issues trying to get one built for Alpine because it doesn't use glibc. It uses muscle c or musclc or however that's spelled or pronounced. And so there were some compatibility issues or whatever for a while, but that didn't matter because we had our next generation had moved off of Couchbase and Solr and all that stuff, RabbitMQ, and we were primarily in the Google Cloud environment. So we had switched to an Alpine image, and we were pulling that from Docker Hub when we were. So the two things that we mainly use it for are for testing. When we'd run our tests, one of our tests is that at the very least we build the Docker container to make sure that it would properly build. But then also with our end-to-end integration testing, you have to have the application running so that Cypress can connect to it and perform the integration test. So we would build a container and run that, and then have a separate container that was running the Cypress test, had Cypress installed, and we ran those. So we have been on that pulling from Docker Hub now for at least 3 years, probably a little more, and not using that custom image in Quay.io. And originally we were pushing that up to Quay.io, but then last year we switched us over to using the Google Artifact Registry. Actually, that wasn't last year. That was a couple months ago. And the container registry and Google Artifactory Registry. So I think since they've retired Quay and trying getting everybody moved over, it was possible that our block of IP addresses that we have inside of Google might have started to experience the rate limiting of more than 200 pulls in a 6-hour period, or we were getting close to that, which is why that request had come out. And one of the ways, and this is pretty interesting, I wasn't paying attention to it, but it hit us Monday about doing it. So I wrote up a Jira ticket, and the options that were available to us, one of them was using Google Cloud repositories, you know, what we have set up as a cache for Docker Hub, kind of like, I don't want to say it's a mirror. I thought it was a mirror or something like that. I thought it was kind of like a one-to-one relationship where you would create a repository, container repository for the image that you wanted to use in Docker Hub. But interestingly enough, it's not that at all. Essentially, what you do is you create what's called a remote repository. And you have to have an authenticated account with Docker Hub for this, I believe. So you set up the authenticated account, you create a token for using that account on the Docker Hub side, and then you use that token, you save it as a secret, the way that we're doing it, inside of GitHub, and you give the... There's a service account that manages the containers that's created by default for the container registry and Artifactory's Artifactory service account. So you have to give that account permissions to access secrets, to be able to read that secret where you set up that token inside of Google Secrets. And then you basically set the container registry up to be a remote container registry for Docker Hub and tell it that it has to use this token that's stored in this Google Secrets. And it wasn't that hard to set up. It was a little confusing at first. I think largely confusing because I have a nasty habit of reading just enough of the documentation to get me going. And had I read just a little bit more, I would have seen that there was the Terraform setup for doing this. So generally, like, a lot of Google's documentation shows you multiple ways to do something. And most of the time, it's the API and or the console, whatever you want, the cloud console or and gcloud SDK command line tool or the API that they make available. And then there's like, you could also sometimes they'll also have, and if it's applicable, like how to do it in Python, Perl, Node, Java, whatever. And so I had was reading this about setting up a remote container repository. And I went over to the somebody just called me. I went over to the Terraform resource and was looking at the resources on there. Terraform usually has some decent documentation for whatever Terraform service or resource that you want to use. It's where I generally go. So there was a lot. It was pretty dense. And sometimes, while it gives you a good overview, it leaves a bit to be desired and is kind of confusing, especially if you need to format it in different ways than what they show you. Like, there's multiple ways that you can format some values, but they show you kind of like one way but not the other ways, and you need to do it the other way. So that can get a little confusing. But eventually, I had going back between all the different resources had seen that what I had found wasn't in the original documentation. It was a Terraform way of doing it. Which pretty much matched the documentation on Terraform that I was reading. So I kind of already gone through a lot of those steps, had a bunch of things set up, but this helped clarify and solidify exactly what I needed to do, and a little bit more with the formatting of certain values in there. But anyway, I got it. It got it set up pretty easily. And I had thought it was like, I was looking all over the place for what is the Docker Hub external resource that I want to create a remote registry for. So I thought it was, a one-to-one relationship where I want the Node 16 Alpine image and the Node 20 Alpine image. So I was trying to figure out how could I create a container remote registry for each one of those. And it turns out it's not. It's like just a generic container remote registry for Docker Hub. So what ends up happening is that once you have it set up for remote registry of Docker Hub, instead of you requesting the container image that you want from Docker Hub directly, you just say to request it from that GitHub remote repository. So you have the path all the way to that remote repository, and then you just do the ending of that path is the name of the container in Docker Hub that you want and the version. And then it goes and it grabs that container and pulls it in from Docker Hub into your cloud remote repository and caches it in there. So you can, I'm not quite clear on how long it caches it in there by default. I was under the impression that it would cache it in there for like an hour, maybe 6 hours. But there are rules that you can set up that I didn't set up yet for that, which controls the lifetime of those containers. So when I had converted two of our application repositories over to that last night, The container that it used, that Alpine 16 container, was still in our repository this morning. So I'm guessing, and there was nothing being worked on those to keep refreshing that container, as far as I know. So maybe what I need to come back and do at some point is a life cycle rule, so that we don't keep old container versions in there for very long. Now, I guess the next thing that I would be interested in seeing, having now converted all our containerized applications over to use that to avoid the Docker Hub rate limiting, I'm interested to see that it keeps up with container updates. Because basically, I was telling it to use the Node 16, the Node container, and the version is 16-Alpine. And if you look at the way that the containers are versioned over there in some cases, for this, you have like Node, and then it's version 16-Debian, and then there's like Node 16-Debian Bullseye, or there's Alpine XXX. Like, when you do like Node 16-Alpine, you're getting the latest, you're supposed to get the latest 16, a Node 16 version under Alpine. And there could be like, every time Alpine updates, like let's just say Alpine 2.2, right? And then there could be 2.3 and 2.4 and 2.5, and then maybe like 3.3.2, 3.4. So if you're just doing Node 16 Alpine, you're going to get the latest one. So when 3.5 comes out, then Node 16 Alpine would be pulling Node 16 Alpine -3.5, right? So that kind of works on that. And then you can get further granular and pin the specific versions if you wanted to. So I'm interested to see if we keep, if it just keeps giving us what we already have in there, or if it does a periodic refresh of that. I'm not too clear on that, but it's something I need to look into. So that was pretty fun. It's crazy, man.
Sounds exciting.
Yeah. Oh boy. Now the one problem I ran into is, so the way that we have to do it at work is, you don't want to set up these services, whatever you have to do, under your account. Because if, you know, if it's under a personal account and then you either leave or, well, you leave, however you leave, whether you move on to another job or, you know, you get laid off or, you know, whatever, however that you leave the company, then if there's something tied to your personal account, that makes it a challenge for the team that you're leaving to continue using, right? So we have a generic group account that we use for specific things like that. Like that's what we use for our GitHub, that generic group account, which has an email address that goes to all of us and stuff like that. So we use that for setting up services. And the thing that like kind of bugged me, like as soon as I set up the account under there and got it going, the first thing that they ask you when you log in the first time is, what Docker plan are you going to be, Docker desktop plan will you be using? The free account, the developer free account, the team, the professional or the corporate account, you know, it's like free developer, the team account, the pro account, and then the corporate account or whatever it is. So we are in the process with negotiating a license with Docker Hub, with Docker, for the Docker desktop, because we have to have Docker desktop for the VIP tool that we've been using, the local development tool, which has been running beautifully, man. I love it. It's so much better than VVV, although it comes at that price. You know, we gotta license the Docker desktop stuff. But now, yeah, so that's where we are. It's pretty cool. It kind of bugs me a little bit. I mean, I don't begrudge Docker Hub rate limiting and making money. I mean, they're providing a valued service, and I think it is important that the cost of that service be shared, particularly if you're a business and you're taking advantage of it. I mean, sure as shit ain't free for them to host all those images and the bandwidth costs that are associated with it. I agree with them selling services and everything. And if you're using Docker Desktop, that is a service that they provide, and there is a charge for it if you're a company. And I don't mind that. I'm not against that. And you don't have to use it. There's other things that you could use. It's just unfortunate that you can run afoul of that problem where, like we have, you can use Rancher Desktop, which is like 98% compatible, or Lima, which is like 98% compatible. But there's just something in there that I'm not quite sure what it is yet, dealing with, particularly with volume permissions, that I have run into multiple times on both of those. And I think the problem with Rancher Desktop is that under the hood, it's using Lima. So whatever problems that you have with Lima and using Colima, you're going to have with Rancher Desktop, particularly with that. And that's the problem I ran into with a few different things that were requesting, like Docker containers that having Docker Desktop, when it involves volume mounting and the permissions inside in thereof. But anyway, it's a price you got to pay for being a company. And damn, mm-hmm. man, companies don't want to pay that shit, though, do they?
Sure don't.
Oh, Joel, I was thinking about you a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah?
I fucking hate email. Like, I don't know what happened. I am so adverse to using email. Because I never use it on a day-to-day basis for correspondence at work. But occasionally I have to go into my email for whatever reason. Or I get called, something gets called out that there was a message sent and we gotta, you know, probably do something, a training or something, and that's the way to find out where it is. But anyway, I saw an email in there from ServiceNow that says develop applications faster with ServiceNow's automated AI. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, hell no. If there's one AI I will never use in this world, and that's ServiceNow's AI, because I have used ServiceNow in general, and I fucking hate it. No way.
I don't have a choice, because we're going to be – in fact, I may be part of a pilot project for that.
For ServiceNow's automated development using their AI?
Well, not development, but using it to I have to forget which ones they said. I'd have to log into my work laptop, and hey, I sure as hell ain't doing that right now. you know, it's been a long week already. I'm my manager's point of contact today and tomorrow. She finally took some vacation. I'm like, you should have done that weeks ago, because you've been so stressed out lately. Anywho. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Yeah, I'm hoping that we can use it for something useful. But you know, it's kind of one of the topics I thought would be interesting today anyway, especially since Samsung had their Unpacked event today, which of course, you know, now that Google and Apple are going to have their own AI, of course Samsung is going to have theirs too. And I'm like, does anybody really want this? Normal users?
I don't know. Do they? Do you want it, Joel?
Uh, not really in its current form, because you know, the way I explained this to people is it's not really artificial intelligence, because it can't think without having something to back, be like in its large language model. Generally, I mean, that's not always the case. Like, for example, I have used Adobe has added AI to its applications. Specifically, the one I use the most is they have a AI denoiser for Lightroom, which I use that to take the grain out of some of the pictures, you know, because when you shoot at the higher ISOs, you can't help but have a little bit of grain because of that. So, and it does a okay job of it. You can, it's basically, I wouldn't know if I would call it 100% that, but, you know, and I've also messed with some of Google stuff, Gemini AI and AI stuff in there. They in the Google Photos, there is an AI piece that you can use to, like if I hit edit on a photo, and you can hit the little AI icon, it lets me use the AI to, like, take things out of the picture, or if it detects, like, that, like, for example, the one I've got here on my phone right now happens to be a picture of Amy McIntyre from Fitness Tech with Amy Mac, and that seen as a portrait, and it'll go through and make enhancements, and it does it like in three different at least three different images, and then you can pick which one you like, and then if you don't like any of those three, you can hit the get a new set of results, and it does it again until you get the edits that you want. But I, the thing that bugs the heck out of me, though, is how many of these companies, like Microsoft, Google, all these companies, think that you're just going to be willing to pay for it. I mean, I already pay enough money for all sorts of little crap. I don't really want to pay any more.
Uh-huh.
But we'll see what happens. You know, because the things that AI could really help with, I don't see it helping yet. Is your company trying to utilize AI in its stuff yet, Dan?
Oh yeah, we've been doing that for a while.
Yay. Well, you know, I'll learn when I have to learn with it and let it go. You know, we have to figure it. I only got another 15 years anyway. Till I retire. Oh, by the way, this is coming from Manjaro. Yeah, I went back to Manjaro because it's awesome.
So you're fucking not around using with getting Ubuntu this working anymore? Huh? Again?
No.
You gave it
not
that
on
old
this. I gave it the try. I think it has to do with I have to look. I haven't tried on. One thing I did do on my Raspberry Pi 8. Or 5, 8 with 8 gig of RAM. I have been using it at my desk as my like personal desktop thing while I'm working. More, I use it more than my Surface Pro 6, which is still sitting there too. But I installed a KDE on it, and it works fine. Works just like KDE does on a laptop. But more important though, it's not tech, but more important, though. Got on a scale this morning.
Oh, yeah?
I'm at 101 pounds lost from my heaviest.
Oh, congratulations, man. That is fantastic. That is fantastic.
Yep, and I even ate one of those super sweet milkshakes they had at Hershey Park last week.
How was Hershey Park?
It's not as well. It was fine. I couldn't get Luke to ride any of the roller coasters. I did ride some of the new ones that I hadn't ever rode in my entire life. Like there's one called Sky Rush, That was good. The Candemonium, which is their newest one I rode. I rode an old school one called the Lightning Racer, which has two coasters right next to each other. And then I also, probably the one that was the most hard on me body-wise was one called the Wildcat's Revenge. And that was based on the Wildcat roller coaster. They put it there like in the mid-90s, I think. And they took the wood track off of it and they converted it to a steel coaster using the wood for the supports for the steel. And that has this dratted restraint system that goes right across your legs.
Okay.
And the loops were the loops and the inversions were fine. That's not what killed me. It's when they went into these sweeping spirals, you know, where it was banked a bit. It was literally crushing into my thigh, and it felt it was like, I swear, when I got off the coaster, I thought I would have a bruise there. I didn't, but it hurt. That leg hurt for a week or two, and it kind of slowed me down a little bit, but that's all right. You know, I'm getting closer and closer to that hike in August.
Is the Super Duper Double Looper still there at Hershey Park?
It is. It is. Well, it was Super Duper Looper. It only ever had one loop.
Oh, wait. I didn't ride. Right. I think it was a Double Looper.
I don't know.
Did you ride it?
See, no, I didn't. The thing is the ride weights on some of these rides are crazy. I think that was one of the crazier ones weight wise. And I figured I rode it enough, and it was better in the when I was a kid. It was the better the way it was, where the only restraint they ever had on that one when I was a kid was this thin bar that went across your lap. And it was comfortable back then, and I'm sure they've changed the restraint system. I just didn't feel like messing with it after I rode that other one. Plus, I couldn't get Luke to ride anything. He rode like the antique cars and Candemonium with me, and that was it. He didn't really want to ride too many rides. We did go out to the water park section, and he farted around the wave pool, and we went on the.
Did you go in the water park?
Yes. Yeah, it was nice. I would say that's the first time I've been to Hershey Park where the water park was up and running, because, you know, you got to remember, I hadn't gone in a long, long time since I went. The last time I went, we went, and it was just too cold to go there. But so I'd never been in that section of the park. But it was nice. It was good.
The last time I was at a water park, and this is going back, oh my gosh, probably 5 or 6 years ago.
Right.
I think it was, I'm going to say it was at King's Dominion. And they had this one, like, tube slot. I'm going to say it was enclosed. So a couple of different, like, water slide choices you go down. And so you would go down, and it was completely enclosed. You couldn't see anything. It was pitch black until you got out at the bottom. But they had some fairly steep hills in their drops that you would go to. And some of them, it was like almost like I felt like I blacked out. It was so steep.
Wow.
Yeah, and I've never had that happen before. It happened to me twice. It happened on that, and it happened on the one roller coaster they have there. I can't remember which one it is. That, like, the G-force when you're going off the first hill, and it's a racing themed one. Like, I think it was like Indy 500.
The Intimidator.
Maybe that was it. I don't know what it was called.
Yeah, it was the one they named after a Dale Earnhardt.
Yeah. And like, that first hill that I got on it, and like, it goes down, and like, it just like hit me so hard that it was like, for just a brief second, it just blacked out. Like, everything just got a little
weird.
Yeah, a little weird. And it was fine, but it was just like, I never had that happen on a coaster before. It never happened on any other coaster afterwards that I've been on. But that one. But also, man, that thing was so fast and rough, it hit me right in the nuts. That chair was not comfortable. Yeah. It was like, oh, I'm not riding this thing again. Black out.
See, Skyrim, the Candemonium, which is their newest one, it didn't invert, neither did Sky Rush. But Sky Rush was the first one I rode the second day I was there. It has a maximum speed of 75 miles an hour. And the ride only goes up to 200 feet high. But it was good. I mean, it wasn't rough. I didn't feel it was rough. I don't know. They call this a Giga Coaster? I don't think they do. It has 4 high speed turns, 5 0G airtime hills, and new upgraded seats and restraints, blah, 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 blah. So, but it was a good one. It was kind of weird in that the way you had to sit in it, your feet didn't touch the floor, which is kind of weird. But the Candemonium was kind of like that too. But that Wildcat's Revenge, ugh, I don't know if I ever want to ride it again. I mean, I will say this, except for those times it was throwing me into the restraint mostly on my right leg, the rest of it was pretty comfortable. The inversions were fine. I mean, it had some heartline rolls in there, and they were just fine. You know, I didn't feel like I was going.
Do they have a tower? Do they have a tower in Hershey Park?
Like Kissing Tower?
A what?
Oh, just a tower that goes straight up and down.
Yeah, like they take you up. Like, I love those things. They take you up, and they just, like, you hang up there for, like, a second or two, and you don't know when they're going to drop you, and then it's just like...
Yeah, they actually have 3 of them, and they're all right next to each other, and each one is taller than the next. Okay. I didn't ride that one, but they do have, of course, the traditional Kissing Tower, the 400-feet observation deck tower, which is always cool. I like that one.
Did you get a kiss
up there?
It's not
rough at all. I always mess with the wife when we get on that one.
Wait, does that just take you up and then bring you down slowly? It doesn't drop you?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's all it does. Yeah, it's just basically...
I guess the other ones are called the Pissing Tower, right? Because you piss your pants up and it lets you go.
They're all themed. Like there's a Reese's one, a Kisses one, and a Hershey Bar
that
one.
Oh, that kind of tower. I thought it meant like kissing. Like smooching. Smooching Tower. I forgot. You're at Hershey Park, of course. Kissing.
Yeah. Kissing Tower is in Hershey Kisses. So.
Is Kit Kat Hershey?
Well, in the U.S. it is. In everywhere else, it's Nestle.
Okay. So I got to ask you this question. If you were there, I don't know.
Right.
Did you see the pink lemonade Kit Kats?
They did have them, yeah.
Did you try it? Like,
no, I didn't.
I saw them at Walgreens, and I'm like, that sounds awful. Like a terrible flavor. And people are like, no, it's really good.
I might have to try one later. The thing I go to – when I go to Chocolate World, the thing I get there are things I can't get elsewhere mostly, okay? Like the Golden Almond bars are one of my favorite ones that they ever make, but I can only seem to find them like on Amazon or at Hershey Park itself. I'm never able to find them in the store, like at the cash register. It's kind of a good thing too, because I looked at the wrapper, especially when I got back. When I was there, dude, I pigged out. I was a pig. But luckily I lost all the weight I gained and then some. Each one of those golden almond bars is actually 3 servings when you look at it. So it's like 140 times 3. So there's how many calories is in one of those. But so I buy those. They did have 2 new flavors of, believe it or not, Reese's Pieces. All right, those are like the M&M's of peanut butter in the middle usually, right? Well, they had ones that had a chocolate cookie in the, like, underneath the peanut butter layer. So there's a chocolate cookie in the middle. Then they had one with a caramel in the middle with the peanut butter, too. But I bought the cookie ones. Those were pretty good, and they're gone already. And I also buy Hershey-Etz because that's about the only place you can get them is at Hershey Park. Though, if you're unfamiliar with them, I mean, us old farts probably have seen them before. But they're basically Hershey's version of the M&M. So it's the plain chocolate with the shell, you know.
Hershey-Etz?
Yeah, E-T-S. Oh. Yeah, Hershey-Etz.
I thought that would be like more like Raisinets.
Yeah, it sounds like it, right? But no, that's what they called it. The closest thing we ever had that was in stores to those was Kissables. Okay. And those were like little tiny Hershey Kisses that were candy coated. That's very similar. But, and like I said, from the last time I was there, you don't really get any chocolate smell anymore at the park, which kind of sucks. But it's because they closed the original factory down, which had no filtering on the air whatsoever, to a new modern facility out in the western side of Hershey. And you can't smell any chocolate at all unless you're in a room with it. But I didn't do – I just couldn't bring myself to spend $35 on the make-your-own candy bar thing. Everything was freaking expensive there. I want to tell you, if you're there, I think if we do it again, they have a meal ticket where it's $42. And you can go and get like a entree, a side, and a drink every 90 minutes. So my theory here is I get one of those for all three of us. And in the first 90-minute block, I get something somebody wants to eat, and I just give it to them. There's no way they would know. I'd pick it up, you know. Uh-huh. And then 90 minutes later, I get to eat, and then 90 minutes later, Luke gets to eat. Because we ate once, and I had a chicken sandwich and fries, a grilled chicken sandwich. Actually, no, I didn't get fries. I got a salad. Luke got a meatball sandwich and fries, and Missy just got fries. That there was $60 just for the three of us.
Holy crap, it's $60.
Yeah, it's fucking expensive. You can get a refillable cup that you get the refill all day, but that's $20. And it's like, bring a water bottle. Right, like I have that Circle water bottle. The second day, I brought that. That's what I drank all day. I just went up to where they had water fountain things that anybody could use all over the park, and a lot of them, depending on where you're at in the park, are right next to the soda fountain, so you can just fill up your water bottle with ice and put some water in it. And since I had the Circle cartridge in it, and I had flavor. And that was fine by me. A lot cheaper and a lot less screwing around with it. You know, it amazes me how much it costs to take a family. I mean, I can't imagine taking a family of five to Hershey Park. They'd be broke.
Yep.
So I don't take my family to parks anymore. I can't afford it.
Right, right. I mean, you can get like these, and what's even worse too is if you want to go and get the fast track thing, that's like, depending which one, there's one you get where you can always use fast track. You can just always go in the fast track line, right? Which gets you basically jump ahead of everybody in line, right?
Right.
That's $140. And I'm like,
$140
per person. Yes. And well, I'm like, no.
It's almost like 7 years gone since we went to the Dallas Fan Expo.
Okay.
No, it's been even longer since we went to Disney. But it's like 7 years gone since we went to the Dallas Fan Expo. And yeah, tickets weren't too bad to get in. But the only people that actually, you know, were able to get in to, like, see the different talks that all the famous people were giving were the people that had paid for the VIP passes that were, like, $200 a head.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, no.
I will say this: if you want to go to an amusement park in Pennsylvania, and I don't know if you've ever been there, Dan, but have you ever heard of Knoebels?
Yeah. Well, I've never been there, but I'm familiar with it.
It's great. The thing they do, you can just walk right in the park. There's no admission fee. The only thing you have to pay for is if you eat, if you buy something. Or if you ride the ride, and you don't have, you can buy a wristband, or you can buy tickets. So if you only want to ride a couple rides, you're gonna save a lot of money. That's gonna be by far the most economical park in all of Pennsylvania. And adults who don't want to ride can just, or in my case, an adult that's my child who didn't want to ride, I don't have to pay for him to ride. Rides that he ain't gonna ride. Yeah, we split up. I'm like, come on, Luke, I want to ride this ride. I'll ride it with you. I got frustrated and I said, fine, I'm gonna go ride it. You guys go wait for me. And then after I got back from the first one, Missy's like, why don't you go ride some rides? Me and Luca would just walk around the park. I'm like, okay. And that's what I did. I didn't ride a lot, you know, and that's the other thing, too. Even with the normal ticket, some rides can be as long as, depending on the ride, it can be like 45 minutes to 2 hours. So you just don't get to ride that many rides nowadays because there's so many people that go to these parks. That's why the water park's probably the better area because there's a lot of rides. Like, you go in the wave pool and you can just hang out there as long as you want. You know, and the same thing with they have their Lazy River ride is called the Intercoastal Highway. They actually had it set up right. You literally can just float all you wanted. And it didn't matter what kind of ticket you had, whether you had the fast track or not. You know, and I'm like, fast track, you know, the fast track thing just tells me, like, do people really want democracy? Because if they wanted democracy, there wouldn't be no fast track.
Let's not pivot bring this politics. To politics.
Yeah. You know what?
That's as far as I'm going.
Is fast track? So there's two different things, isn't there? Isn't there fast track? But there's also the ticket-based system where you go and grab your ticket, and then that's as if you were standing in line.
Yeah,
that's not the same
thing,
right?
No.
Because do they do that at Hershey Park too? Because I think they don't. Do that at like Busch Gardens. Or
they don't.
Shit.
Yeah,
I know they do that at Disneyland, but not. I know like some places if you get a season pass, they give you like X number of fast track tickets.
Yeah,
too,
and... so they might do that. I mean, I don't live close enough to any amusement park to make it worth my while. I mean, I guess the closest I got is if I bought anything, I'd buy it for the new Six Flags, which is Cedar Fair and Six Flags merged together. So Cedar Fair is the one who owned they owned several, but the ones in Ohio, they owned both of them. They owned Cedar Point and Kings Island, which used to be a Paramount park. It's kind of the same thing. I think they own King's Dominion as well now. But they merged with Six Flags on July 1st.
Okay.
So I don't know if the – when Six Flags owned Wyandotte Lake, which is a water park that's now called Zumbezi Bay, which is connected to the zoo. but when they owned Wyandotte Lake, we did buy a season pass for there. And the nice thing at Six Flags did then, I don't know if they do it anymore, is once you bought a season pass at Wyandotte Lake, I could use it at Six Flags Ohio, which is now completely gone now, but that's what they should do in a lot of places, especially Cedar Fair. And I don't know if they do that or not, you know, because would I go to those Cedar Point and then maybe Kings Island in 1 year? Sure, maybe. I don't know. I will say this. I definitely don't enjoy amusement parks like I used to, you know, like I was younger. You know, because it's just like, you know, when we were kids, you know, like you rode the Comet. You've been to Hershey Park, I assume, right, Dan?
Oh yeah, long time ago.
Like, so you remember when you was a kid, you rode the Comet, right? What was the restraint? A fucking bar. That's all it was.
Yeah.
Much more comfortable. Probably much more.
That's the way it was when I was safe. A kid.
Yeah, much less safe on a wooden roller coaster. Much less safe,
especially when you got little kids with you, and you're sitting next to them, and
we didn't care.
It won't go all the way down, and you got to hold your kid in place.
Yeah. Now everything is like so tight in and on you. It's like, you know, when I got off that, like half of my car was all complaining about our legs, and I'm like, I'm glad I'm not the only one to complain about it. One smart thing they did, though, because on both the Wildcat and Wildcat Revenge and Sky Rush, I think they probably did it in Candemonium, but I just left my stuff with Misty. But they had lockers that were free that you can stick like your bag and your phone and your glasses and anything loose. And they were really careful about whether you had anything loose. They wouldn't let you take anything, your glasses or anything on the coaster. Okay. So, and at least they have a free space that you can put things like your phone and stuff. So you can feel safe while you're riding a ride, that nobody's going to gank your phone while you're riding a ride. And the lockers use a combination that you set when you put your stuff in it. So they have
those too.
Yeah. But it was pretty nice with that regard. But the rest of it was just most of the – I'm happy to report that even with the weight loss – I was more comfortable on all the coasters I rode than I ever have been in the past, but it still fucking hurt. But the Candemonium that you sat four wide on, and they had chocolate colored tracks. That's the newest roller coaster they had, and it's right at the front where when you were a kid, Dan, the front of the park used to be called the Tudor Square, if I remember right, it was.
That's gone. It's been so long.
Yeah, but that's completely gone now. They completely redid the front. The first section's called Chocolate Town.
Yeah, Chocolate Town. They and still the have that like little ride through or whatever it is of chocolate or.
Chocolate World has a ride. Actually, Chocolate World technically has the free ride, which is the one that you know, all right, and it's of course completely different than when we were kids,
uh-huh.
All right, uh-huh. And then they have like a couple like video things. They have those are paid, of course. Then they have the thing where you can make your own chocolate bar, or a thing where you can make your own peanut butter cup with anything you want inside of it, other than peanut butter too. And those are, of course, you know, are things that cost quite a bit of money to do. But yeah, so I didn't do those things, but that's a comfortable ride. That one is actually for similar thing, but it's you know, we'll see how all that works in the future. I'll probably go back, but you know, because it's cool. But I don't know if, you know, you know, we'll see how Luke feels about it. I don't know if I want to do 2 days again, because I think we can get it if we stay for the whole complete time. Because that's the other thing annoying me is neither time did we stay till closing, which I'm like, felt like a waste to me. But you know, I guess it wasn't, because he still had fun anyway. I had more fun going to Seltzer's. I got me some Lebna bologna and some of their meat sticks. Those are good too. Those you can't get anywhere. And they have jerky, Dan, made out of the same meat mixture that Lebna bologna is made out of. And let me tell you, that's some tasty stuff, man. But didn't get any John Cope's. I didn't really look for it. I figured if I want to get some of that, I can just order it. Pennsylvania food website. But, and then I went to dinner with a friend. Actually, I took them out to dinner. I was the nice visitor, and I spent money on my friend and her kids while we were there. And I found the Appalachian Trail in Pennsylvania, and I walked, technically 2 miles, but really it's the same mile north and south. So, and that was a little rough, man. It wasn't hard.
How far was it?
Just a mile. A mile. I went a mile north and then a mile south to get back to where my car was.
How far are you supposed to be walking in a couple of months?
220 miles for that, yeah. No, that, it's different, man. The trail that we'll be on in Burr Oak is a groomed trail. The AT has the Appalachian Trail Conservancy that takes care of the trail, but they don't do much, okay? So the section of the Appalachian Trail I was on had a lot of loose rocks on it. And I think I need to do some more natural trail hiking before I'm really, really ready for that. But, you know, granted, you know, by the time I got from Georgia to Pennsylvania, I would definitely have my hiking legs under me, and I wouldn't care as much. But, I mean, it wasn't physically tough. You know, it was brutal on my feet, especially right after I was at Hershey Park all day. So, yeah. But it was good, though. I did. There was another more groomed trail that Swatara State Park, which is right on the Swatara Creek. The Swatara Creek kind of runs through Hershey, Harrisburg, and all through Lebanon County, I think. And that park was pretty nice. That was like a 3 or 4 mile hike up to a cabin and back. But I've done at least one 10 mile training hike. I'm planning on trying to do something close to that this weekend, and then I'll be on call next week. So, you know, call weeks suck for me going out into the wilderness hiking, but I did order a new watch though for the hike, because my Pixel watch that I have, I really don't have much confidence in that it's going to be able to track the hike for the full 8 hours. The battery, especially, and I don't know if it's because I'm trying to track it both as an exercise in Google Fit and track it in All Trails. But, you know, either way, I decided I would jump on the Garmin smartwatch, which is running on Garmin OS, and I went with the Garmin Fenix 7X, which is a 51 millimeter screen on it. Oh, and it's the solar variant, so it has a solar cell on it as well. And in a normal, like, day-to-day, like me going to the gym or going out for a hike, you know, 4 or 5 days a week, and then just walking around stuff, the battery life is like 30 days. Now, if I'm tracking an exercise out in the woods, I'm getting less, but when you're actively tracking, it's going to be right around 50 hours of battery, which is more than enough. So, and the other things that Garmin watches have that other smartwatches don't have is, as you're doing reps, it can count the reps for you so that you can keep track of the reps of how much of, like, if you're doing a weight training thing. It does a lot more different exercises that some of the smartwatches just don't do, including also loading topo maps onto the watch itself. And the cool thing is I, unlike the Pixel Watch, when you know you want to have the Fitbit subscription, and you probably want to pay for it, otherwise it's pretty basic. That's like $9 a month for the Pixel Watch. Garmin Connect is free. So, and they have their own apps. Let me see what the apps are written in, a kind of a weird language. Hold on. Monkey C is what it's written in, which I've never heard of before. That's what the apps are written in. And I looked through it, and they actually had a, quite a bit of apps in there. You know, not everything you might want, but they had quite a bit. Spotify was in there. A few other things like it were in there. And I think I did like a little bit of research on it before I bought it. Garmin is in second place in smartwatches behind Apple, believe it or not. They're higher than Wear OS. So... But yep, I wish it was Android on it or Wear OS, but you know, whatever. I know that, although you did see Samsung Unpacked was today though, Joe, right? I think I already mentioned
that. You mentioned it, but I did not.
But they had the Galaxy Watch 7 and an Ultra version of the Galaxy Watch.
What features do they have?
Well, they did. Basically, they're trying to compare with the Apple Watch Ultra.
Of course they are.
Yeah, let me look it up here. Now, it's kind of squarish, but the face is still round like the rest of the Galaxy Watches are. And, of course, Galaxy AI is here in the watch.
Almost need an AI to manage all the different AIs.
Maybe. Right? Wear OS 5, I believe, is what's shipping on it. You see, the most powerful... The Ultra has the most powerful smartwatch processor, sapphire crystal glass, aerospace grade titanium. I believe it also costs upwards of $600 too, if I remember right. Hundred hours of battery life in the power save mode, 48 hours. Of exercise in power save mode. And it has an orange, dark gray, green, or white band. And they have
hours if it's not in power save mode.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, they it looks like they have like a band similar to the Apple Ultra, the kind of like the canvasy kind of band. It looks like canvas to me. Red light mode for when you're at night. At least I know. Now the one that's the one thing the Garmin Fenix 7X that I've got coming that it has is it does multi-band GPS or GNSS, I think they call it. So it can read GPS satellites, GLONASS, which is the Russian global locating thing, they're equivalent to GPS, and it can also read Galileo, which I believe is Europe's GPS, and it can run all three of those at the same time. And the tracks that you get from the on the Garmin watches are much more accurate than probably many of them. Although I think the Apple Watch Ultra is similar to that, and that's probably what they did with the Galaxy Watch Ultra as well. But I haven't had a lot of time to read through things today on that yet. It's interesting. Oh, they brought up the ring to a Galaxy Ring. So instead of wearing a watch for your tracking, you can buy a ring.
Yeah, they brought that out to compete with the Aura. And from what I understand, right, it's actually fairly decent.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. Yep. I think some of the rings can actually track sleep better than some of the watches can.
Well, if it's a good price, maybe I'll try one.
Yeah. Here's all the specs here. So, and on the Galaxy Watch 7, you can get a sapphire crystal. Actually, they're all sapphire crystal for the lens. So let's see. The Ultra has 10 atmospheres, water resistance, IP68, and the other watches have only 5 atmospheres. All three support Mil Standard A10H for that. The Ultra has a 590 milliamp hour battery. The Watch 7, oh, I'm sorry, I'm also looking at the Galaxy Watch 6. Apparently, they're still selling that one. So the Watch 7 has 400, either, that's weird. It has 425 milliamp hour / 300 milliamp hour. So I assume that might be two different sizes of it. So the two new Samsung watches have a 3-nanometer processor, 5-core. Whereas the 6 has 5-nanometer and it's 2-core. So, and they also brought out normal-looking earbuds for once in the Galaxy Buds. The ring looks kind of comfortable to me, too.
But the when you say normal looking, you mean ones with stems?
Yes. And instead of the beans that they brought out when the first time they brought out headphones. What I'd like to find for the hike, though, is I'd love to find an old school LG Tone headset with the band that goes around my neck. Because my earbuds, I'm lucky if it lasts 3 hours. So I'll definitely have to take both sets if I'm on the hike, if I've got them jammed in the whole time, which I might. I definitely will have it probably in the latter half of the hike. I'll probably have them jammed in all the time. Cause,
wow, you know, I wish I had some to spare.
Right?
They're getting harder to find.
They are. They totally are. I'd definitely buy one of those and use that as the primary, with the backups being the others. And then, you know, and I'll have a battery bank with me, but on here I'm saving up. If that, it don't matter. I'm going to go get it anyway. But I was saving up to get a new pack for the hike, because I have one, but it has one annoying problem with it. As I'm hiking, the sternum strap starts to creep its way up towards my fucking neck. And I'm constantly have to push that thing down so I don't choke myself.
Oh, well, guess I'm going to hook it to your belt.
So I'm actually going to get an Osprey Stratus.
String and a carabiner.
Yeah, right. Now, Osprey Stratus pack that I saw. Up until this week, it's been like $158, $158, $158. I looked on Amazon today, and it's $175. I'm like, you son of a bitch.
Yep.
Ah, well, it's still cheaper than $180, which is what I saw at Public Lands. So, and one big thing I like about it is it has a pocket. Two pockets on either side of the hip belt. So I'll jam one earbud case in there, the other earbud case in the other. And it has a suspension. So the main part of the pack doesn't rest on your back. And air can circulate between the pack and your back. So hopefully you don't sweat as much. But anywho... I think it also comes with a 2-liter water bladder in it too. 24-liter pack. It's a small one.
So, I hope you make it past the first 3 miles.
I will. I'll probably make it the whole way. Oh, wait a minute. How? Could have been just where I was at, because I just looked it up now in the web browser here, and it says $156, which is what I thought it was. Oh, wonder if it. Let me sign in and see if it changes. I gotta hit the one time thing here. Multi-factor. All right, see. That's listed. It's $156. Okay, maybe. Well, that was weird. Why did it say that? I have enough of my good boy points. I might be able to help that with the Amazon gift card. So. Yeah, as we use bonusly. That's what we do on our for our company there. So the pack will be red. Yeah, I'm probably gonna put like a rain poncho in there, as I call that rain insurance, because if it don't have the poncho, it's gonna rain like BG, you know, like hell. wait, it says internal hydration reservoir sleeve with hose port and back panel accommodates up to a 3-liter reservoir sold separately. I don't care. It's got water bottle pockets on either side. That'll work for me. with stow on the go trek and pull attachments too. Yeah, I need that. Anywho, how was your 4th of July?
It was hot.
Yes, very warm. Nice and
yeah,
dull.
It was pretty warm too. We didn't really get to see fireworks except for on TV. There really wasn't a lot of fireworks in the neighborhood this year either. That's something I noticed. I think that's because of the economy.
Now, I would say different where I was. We actually bought some fireworks. So, well, my daughter did. Avery did. She took Lily and they went and bought some fireworks. Not major things. A couple Roman candles, you know, stuff like that. A few decent, like the last one they got, the one was like $30. It shot off and like you got a nice little flower up there of explosion. But my mother-in-law's tenants, she has on her property, there's another house that my sister-in-law had built over there. Her and her husband had built, and then they moved out of there like over a decade ago. So she rents that house out, and they were firing off some pretty heavy duty fireworks over there. Kind of, you would almost go see done professionally. They put some big blasts out there. But yeah, it was hot as hell though. It was humid and hot in Chester, South Carolina. And no,
we had the fireworks show up the street the week before. I thought I mentioned that last show. So
was that a professional fireworks show? Or?
Oh yeah. It's the largest fireworks show in Texas.
Oh wow, that's cool. They didn't do fireworks at in Hampton. They did a drone light show this year, so we didn't get to see that unfortunately because we weren't in town.
No, I got to see one of those at Christmas time.
Okay.
And it's actually kind of cool because they'll send a whole crap ton of drones up there and just like make pictures of stuff.
Yeah, the picture they had showing it off was like American flag, and I was like, wow, that looks really cool. That's a lot of drones, I guess, flying up there. I would really like to have seen that. Maybe next year. We have, there's actually a company on the fort here that is a drone. Let me see if I can pull them up on the map, what they're actually called. They don't build drones. I think they provide services for using drones. Let me see if they're listed on the map here. If I can get the company's name.
I don't think they did that. See, in Columbus, they did the traditional red, white, and boom, which I'll never go to in person because it's just not nice place to go. You know, it's so many fucking people. And I didn't even go drive over to because we came back on the 4th of July. I wanted to stay till Friday. Luke didn't want to. So we came home a day early because I kind of was done too. Kind of glad I did though, because then I went for a hike on Friday.
Oh, it's called Longbow. The The company's called Longbow at Fort Moreau, Unmanned Systems Research and Technology Center. I don't know. I don't think they were the one that put the drone show on, though. Maybe. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen some of them. They do look cool. It reminds me a little bit of the when I was in college, they used to do, they're like where COSI is in Columbus, used to be a high school, and that high school was closed down for many years, and they had like steps that led down to the Scioto, and that was kind of like almost like an amphitheater there. That's gone now, but when I was in college, they used to do these, like every Friday night, they'd have a laser show. Yeah, it was actually pretty cool. They'd fire the laser against one of the buildings downtown, and it did some like animations and stuff like that. And that was really cool. I forget what that was called. Kind of in a similar vein to the, the drone show. Laser light shows animate downtown River Fest. That was from 1988, but they still did them in the 90s, early 90s.
I think they still do laser light shows now too. Like, I know they used to do like a Pink Floyd laser light show.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. They just don't do it downtown at the amphitheater that doesn't exist anymore. Yeah, they shot the lasers at the state office building that was at 65 South Front Street in Columbus. Yeah, and the lasers were installed in the old Central High School building, which is now, and that's been redid into the Central Ohio what's COSI stand for? Center of Science and Industry, which is like a science museum. Columbus Discover the Light show featured pop, patriotic, and country music to lasers drawing designs on the building. Yeah, that was really cool. Yeah, they did return each year through 1992 when it and Riverfest ended in their Columbus run. Yeah, and then in the same article they talk about the Columbus City Center, which was a downtown mall that opened in 89, like my first year in college out here. And it was raised in 2009. Barely made it 20 years. Malls are freaking depressing now, I'm telling you what. I don't even think everyone has one good mall anymore.
Yeah, it is a little depressing.
And we have no Sears and Roebuck anymore.
Sears has been dead for a while now, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. It was one of my favorite stores to go to in the mall. Because Craftsman tools were always the best. At least Craftsman's still around. You can get most of them at Lowe's, I think. Or Kmart, if you still have a Kmart, which most people don't have that anymore either.
I think there's only like one Kmart in the world, isn't there?
There's none in the United States, I think, and I think the one you're talking about might be like in Guam.
All right, as of May 2024, there are 12 Kmart stores in the United States.
Oh, there's more than I thought.
I don't know.
JCPenney's is still around, and I like JCPenney's. They've got good clothes.
I've been to a mall since 20...
Yesterday.
February of 2020.
As of May 2024, oh, there are 13 Sears stores in the United States. They're located in 7 states and territories, including in 11 cities. And California has 4 stores. Jersey City has 1 location.
Oh, we got to wrap this up. It's
yes, we do.
So you get a workout tomorrow.
Yes, I do. Boot camp tomorrow. I get to sleep in, so I don't have to go. I don't have to go hike in the morning.
Oh, that's cool. All right, I'm gonna play us out. Everybody, have a good night. We'll see you in a week. Behave yourself, Joe.
Why would I do that?
Yeah.
Because Joel needs you as his moral guidance.
Hardly get a word in edgewise when that man gets on.
All right, here we go.
I am short.
Oh my God. It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up. Just shut up.
It's over.
Well, you were making Ed Fu Young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah.
Ay, 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 ay.
I had stuff to talk about, too.
Oh, you...
Oh, you did.
Oh, what was that?
Joel taking a shit.
Yeah, it sounded like it. On the microphone. Like he shoved it all the way up his ass to take the crap.
Man, it's hard to believe it's already July.
Right. It kind of feels like August, but that's because of the temperature.
Oh, is that... Are you impacted at all by the storm?
Not really. We had like a couple of days of rain, but that was it.
Well, that's good. I'm glad it's not going to hit you. Too bad.
Yeah, not this time.
Maybe cool you off a bit.
Well, I hear it didn't help Houston. Like, it's blazing hot there, but they have no electricity, so...
They're
not in a good way.
Nah, it doesn't sound like it. Whew. I'm going to stop recording. I don't think Dave's going to be on this week. I think he said he was going to be out this week. And I suspect Joel will be late. So, no time... Like the present to start, I guess. Let me get the stream going. Da, da, da. Let me double check the stream. Oh, wait. Yeah, there we go. There we go. Yeah, there we go. There's the stream. Stream is playing. Stream is playing. Playing for you, Joe.
Does anybody still listen to the stream?
Yeah, Murph does.
I thought he came on here and went in the listening booth.
Sometimes. I don't know.
I'd like sweet meat.
Let's see. All right. You know what? Let me look something up.
What you looking up?
Someone Docker Hub. So let me see, what do the company board? Okay, let me see here. I wonder why this wasn't. Okay. Let's get the show started, and then I'll talk about it.
Okay.
Yeah, this is just relevant to the show, so. Yeah. What am I looking for? Oh, yeah. Let me see. What should we do this week? Yeah, there we go. And there we go. All right. This is 1059.